This is the EWN Radio Network.
It's a buyer beware situation with supplements. I mean, that's the bottom line. You need to know what you want and what you need, you know, before you buy something. We've never found any appreciable amount of mercury in fish oil, and the reason is that mercury binds to protein, and when they make fish oil, they're basically squeezing the fish. So we test for it anyhow, but it's really not a big concern. We do find some low levels of PCBs, however, in some fish oil.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's my pleasure to be with you here another Friday evening, 7 p.m. I know this goes into podcasts too, but every Friday night, 7 p.m., we have a new episode. And thank you for joining me, regardless of what day it is. It's actually the start of my weekend, and I have some fun things planned. I hope you have fun things planned all the time, whether it's your weekend or not. There's a lot to be said about thriving, not just surviving, and having fun, because we have to take into account this is our life, and we are what we make of it. So I say, let's make it fun. And I've got some farmers markets planned for this weekend and a craft show. I love craft shows. I like seeing how creative people can be. I'm also a bit of a do-it-yourselfer, so I like to go and say, oh, wow, I could do that. Very inspirational. Keeps the mind young and fresh as well. Another thing that I've got special for tonight is a topic we have not ever discussed. And I think the reason is it's a very confusing topic to me, and it's a very expensive topic. And that's the topic of supplements. Maybe you too have been told by different medical authorities in your world that you need to take specific supplements to continue to do better, thrive, add to missing things. Vitamin D was one that I was low on when I first started my journey. And then the funny thing is, I'm also told to stay out of the sun because of the medication I was on at the time. So how do you get the right vitamin D? I had all sorts of questions like that about supplements. And then also wanted to know and do my own research beforehand, because a lot of times the people regarding the supplements, and they're well-meaning and knowledgeable and all that, may not know all the different contraindications or even the ways you should take it. Is it fat soluble? Is it water soluble? You could just go on and on about the research that you need to do when you're mixing all of these supplements. Now, oftentimes people don't think supplements are like, I'll say, a prescription drug, but they are. They're very similar in relationship to how they change the chemistry in your body. I remember when we had a doctor on talking to us about how our body is one big chemical soup, and food changes the chemistry of our body, supplements change the chemistry of our body, the prescriptions we're taking changes the chemistry of our body. Sleep, or the lack thereof, changes the chemistry of our body. I could just go on and on. Exercise, or the lack thereof, changes the chemistry of our body. So I always say, be careful what we put into our body. It's an amazing machine, but we need to take care of it in the right way. And so tonight, I have Dr. Todd Cooperman on. And he's a noted researcher and commentator on consumer healthcare issues and is the president of ConsumerLab.com, which was founded in 1999. And ConsumerLab.com has become the leading independent evaluator of dietary supplements in the U.S. I'm a member and I just love it because in his newsletter, he sends out all the latest research and it's got all these different brands listed. And I just think it's fantastic because if you're interested in like B12 supplements, what should I take? Or just recently there was one on fish oil and I was like, oh my gosh, it said something like fish oil spoiled and I had never thought of that. So I just love ConsumerLab.com. We'll talk to Dr. Cooperman a bit more about that. But I want to finish his bio here because it's pretty awesome. He is also the president and founder of PharmacyChecker.com, which independently evaluates online pharmacies, and was the founder of Care Data Reports, a consumer research company. Earlier in his career, he was a business analyst for Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, director of business development for, oh man, I'll say it's Sympatic, is that right?
Synaptic,
okay. Pharmaceuticals, I've always been a creative speller, so you know, we'll just go with it. And a consultant for the Wilkerson Group. He received his MD from Boston University School of Medicine and a BA in Medical Science and a minor in Economics at Boston University, so there you go. See, awesome. Awesome. Welcome, Dr. Cooperman. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks, Sharon.
Now, tell us a little bit about Consumer Lab, and then we'll jump into some of my questions about supplements. I gave my version of it, but tell us the real version.
Yeah, well, I like your version of it. It's accurate. So in 1999, about 18 years ago, there were a number of articles coming out about supplements that really didn't contain what they claimed or were contaminated. And I was trying to determine, well, who's really checking these products? Well, the FDA is not. It only really jumps in when people are really dying from supplements, like there was an ephedra problem around that time. They were working on that. But no one is really checking the quality of supplements. It's really left up to the manufacturers themselves. And even at that time, there weren't even good manufacturing practices described for what this industry should be doing. They have been determined now, but even those are pretty loose. So back in 99, I basically tapped a researcher who was at the FDA doing some of the research there on supplements and asked him to join me to start ConsumerLab.com. And since then, we've been going out and we go out and buy products off the shelf, all kinds of dietary supplements, as well as foods that have health benefits like dark chocolate or olive oil. And we are continually testing and reporting on those results and have been doing so for a long time. We have over, I think it's 75,000 paying subscribers like yourself now. And we also put out a newsletter, as you mentioned, that comes out twice a week, letting people know what the latest information is. We're continually going through all the clinical information that relates to these products and putting out updates about what we now know about how to better use some of these supplements, when to take them, what works, what doesn't work. We're not selling supplements. We have no horse in this game. We're only trying to educate consumers so they really know what is the best product they could take, should they take it, how to take it, and things like that.
And I love it because in your newsletter, and then, by the way, you can also, if you miss the newsletter, you can go online and research a particular product if you're like, well, I haven't seen the newsletter on that product. It's got fantastic, I guess it's called a database. I'm not really that techie, but you can research it.
Right. The newsletter is really just an alert to let you know something new is on the website, new article. All the content is right there on the site. We have close to 90 major reviews of different types of products covering about 1,000 different supplements, fish oil, vitamin B12, et cetera. Answers to all kinds of questions people have. And we're answering questions every week about supplements. So there's a kind of a CL answers section. There's an encyclopedia. You can look up drug interactions with supplements there as well. So all kinds of information. It's all on the website at www.consumerlab.com.
And I love that we can ask questions. The other day, a question went out over the newsletter about bone broth, and I was so excited because I'm a fan of it, and it's very much now, I'll say, in fad or in vogue for people with autoimmune disease. But I've always been curious, gosh, how do I know that it's the best bones and all of that? It just sounds the way they make bone broth, a lot might leak out and all of that. So I'm so thrilled. I'm excited for when that's going to come out.
That will be out later this year, our bone. So we're out there actually now picking picking the products, and we'll be testing them, you know, looking for contaminants, heavy metals that might be in the bone broth. as well as protein content and other things.
So what are some of your more popular questions that you get from people, whether it's related to autoimmune or not?
Well, first, some of the general questions we get is, well, you know, in general, how good is the quality of supplements in the U.S.? And we're in probably a better position than anyone to determine that, because we're always testing these products. But approximately one out of four supplements that we purchase and test fails to meet our quality criteria.
That's 25%.
Yeah, one out of four. It is. And it's even higher with herbal supplements. It's lower with single ingredient vitamins and minerals, where, you know, maybe you're looking at 5, 10%. But we have some reviews where, you know, 70% of the products fail. Again, more often with herbal supplements. The reasons why these products fail typically are they have too little of what they claim. You know, an example with an herb would be, you know, it's terrible, but a lot of herbal extracts that are purchased by companies that put them out here in the U.S., they're purchased often from China, and they can determine what level of quality they want when they buy that, because it'll be certified based on a certain type of test. There are some tests that are very lenient. For example, it might be a test is just looking for a color, and they certify it just based on the color.
So that's a bright orange turmeric. It must be good.
Seriously, right. And then there are others that are based on these, you know, more specific tests, like based on the HPLC testing, chromatography that we can do to really look at the specific fingerprint of an herb. And what can happen actually is a company doesn't want to buy a good quality product. They can buy a certified, you know, herbal extract that's really made from the actual herb that's been pressed. All the good extract has been sold off at a higher price point. And what's left over, which is what they kind of call the mark, which is really like if you were to make coffee and have the coffee grounds left over, that would be like the mark. They can still call that coffee. So here they still call it the herb. And then they'll spike it with just one compound that they know will, that simple test, make it look like it has 100% of what it claims. Those kinds of products are on the market here, you know, as well as better products. And Consumer Lab is out there testing these, holding them to very high standards to really determine, are these real or are they not? And then on top of that, we want to make sure that they're not contaminated, because herbal supplements are also more commonly contaminated than other supplements due to heavy metals that kind of come up into them, you know, from the ground, down from the air, et cetera. So the other supplements where we see issues, multivitamins, just because they're so complex, and especially if they're made to say as a gummy, which have become extremely popular, it's harder to make them. You get all those vitamins at the right amounts when you're dealing with a gummy or some kind of candy form. So we see more problems with those types of supplements. Some gummies are fine.
Well, somehow in my mind, a gummy, maybe I'm just too old-fashioned, but all the sugar content to produce a gummy, somehow my mind, maybe not totally defeating the purpose, but changing the mix anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of sugar in there is not a lot typically. Okay. In a gummy, but it's still, you know, there's no reason to be, you know, taking in sugar when you're just trying to get something healthful for yourself. But unfortunately, due to the sugar and the good taste, people take more, you know, than they're supposed to take. That's a big issue with the gummies as well, especially for kids who might have access to them. So we're concerned about gummies. They really have to be used appropriately. They become, you know, extremely popular. We test probiotics. You know, there have been some years where half of them have failed because the probiotic organisms themselves were dead.
Wow.
And that can happen actually if it's a very hot year and you buy a product or you have it shipped and it's hot out and it's kept in poorly stored conditions. These are sensitive organisms and they can die, you know, just as if when you buy a probiotic, you know, you need to maintain it properly. If there's humidity, it can activate the organisms. Then they're alive. They're looking around for food. There is none and they die. So, you know, humidity and high heat is a problem with probiotics. I'm trying to think of some of the other issues. Fish oils, as you mentioned earlier, we just put out a newsletter this morning on a new study that found that rancid fish oil doesn't seem to lower cholesterol as well as good quality fish oil. And so that's another thing that we test for. Whenever we test an oil, whether it's a fish oil or a flaxseed oil, we're testing for what's called rancidity. You know, is it fresh or is it rancid? And so we're looking for certain levels of oxidation that have occurred there. And so you're better off buying something that's not oxidized. And so if you look at our report on fish oil, you'll see which products were not oxidized, which were perfectly fine, had all the EPA and DHA, the omega-3s that you want. And we also test those for heavy metals as well. So people are asking, do you find mercury in fish oil?
Right.
I can tell you, we've never found any appreciable amount of mercury in fish oil. And the reason is that mercury binds to protein. And when they make fish oil, they're basically squeezing the fish. They're not taking the protein. So the protein is staying with the fish meat, not with the oil. So we test for it anyhow, but it's really not as big a concern. We do find some low levels of PCBs, however, in some fish oil. Again, most are pretty clean, and most of them are distilled molecularly as well, which kind of cleans them up. But, you know, I can go on for an hour about any one of these things. But, you know, like fish oil, another thing to look for would be triglyceride form, and there is an ethyl ester form. There may be a benefit with the triglyceride form. We identify which products are in the triglyceride form, you know, as well in our reports. And then we kind of show you what's our top pick based on all these concerns, as well as how every product, you know, in that review fared, whether it passed, failed, and why, as well as a cost comparison.
Yeah, that's what I love, because you have an image so you could see the bottle, like, oh yeah, I recognize that label or logo. And then you have it right there in bright letters, like approved or failed. And I'm like, it's just so easy to figure it out when I've got my questions on my list of what I should take. Goodness, we just got so much great information there. A question popped up that I hear a lot of time, because leaky gut's a big issue with autoimmune people. We can debate whether leaky guts are real or not, but I do believe that gut health is important. So let's jump back to probiotics for just a couple of minutes. Gosh, there's so many questions that you brought up, and I was thinking not always related previously to probiotics, but everything from when you test it, to maybe it's been sitting on the shelf a while and a lot of probiotics are refrigerated. I'm thinking, is there any way to know that even if it gets a good rating, by the time it gets to me on the other end and I purchase it, is there any way to know that it's still good?
Right. Well, first of all, I should say we're not the only company or group, you know, out there that tests supplements. They're the USP, the United States Pharmacopeia. Actually, we have the oldest program, but they have the oldest book out there, which they publish a different methods for testing things, the USP. They started a program also, and there are a couple of other programs. None of them report any problems that they find. They're only doing certification testing. Now, when we have a certification program as well, but what's interesting, and I should, because what you said raises this point, when we test a product, we're buying it off the shelf just like you are.
Okay.
Or we're buying it on the internet like you are. We're only buying it the same way a consumer would buy it. These other programs actually get the products from the manufacturer. So if there is a problem with transport, we will see it in the products that we're testing. They may not see these problems, you know, that are due to how the products are being handled. Just so you know, we're probably seeing the same kinds of problems that you're going to see. But when you do get a probiotic, you know, is there a way that you could tell that it's actually active or not? You know, I guess you could culture, you know, you could grow out the organisms like we do.
get your little petri dish out and start.
Right, exactly. I don't think there's like an easy home test for doing that kind of thing. Another test that we do on every tablet that we order and buy and test here is a disintegration test. Most probiotics are not tablets. They're usually capsules.
Right.
But tablets, you want to make sure those tablets will break apart because we do find that, maybe a little under 5% of tablets don't break apart properly. They're compressed too much, or they have some kind of coating on them that prevents them from breaking apart properly. So we do this, it's called the disintegration test on every tablet. And it's just another thing that we do. It's something that you actually could do at home. Again, it's not going to tell you if the product contains what it's supposed to or not. But at least if you're concerned about the tablet, you know, you're putting tablet in body temperature water, 98.6. You're trying to keep it at that temperature. You can put it on a hot plate. You're actually stirring it, you know, for like half an hour. We have a machine, obviously, that does all this. But that is something, that's the one thing you could do at home. Actually, an interesting thing you can do with fish oil at home is if you put fish oil on styrofoam, and, you know, you'll see this on the internet, and it's actually true. Certain types of fish oil, if it's ethyl ester, will actually kind of bore a hole through that styrofoam. It doesn't mean it's dangerous, but it has to do with, you know, the molecular structure of ethyl esters. The triglycerides won't do that. And actually, the triglycerides probably are a little better. There's some evidence suggesting that. So if your fish oil, you know, goes through styrofoam, it's not going to hurt you, but it may not do as much for you as a triglyceride form.
What a visual, doctor. I start flashing back to those videos where they use sodas and things and eating different things. I'm like, wow, that's a visual I never thought about my supplements, but... Oh my gosh. So we need to take a quick commercial break, guys. We'll be back in just a minute with Dr. Cooperman, because this is just amazing. I've always got so many questions about supplements. So hang on, we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and we're here with Dr. Todd Cooperman. He's a noted researcher and commentator on everything consumer healthcare issues, and he's also the founder of ConsumerLab.com. And today we're talking about supplements and all matters of fact about supplements, what they can do for you, what they can't, how to know good ones. So we're going to dive right back in. We've been talking, I just love this, going down all sorts of rabbit holes, but just getting tons of great information. So we've talked about fish oils and a little bit about probiotics. What are some other things? Gosh, how do we know, say, if somebody tells us we need a supplement, how do we know it's not contraindicated with some of the other supplements we're taking? I know when I go to a pharmacy and I say, here's another prescription, they sure have a way of... But with supplements, we don't have that opportunity. But I know that on Consumer Lab, you do talk to that.
So it's a very good point, because supplements can interact with other supplements, and they can interact, obviously, with drugs. On our site, we actually have drug interaction checker, where you can type in, look up your drug or your supplement and see what the interactions are. So we do have that available. You know, Consumer Lab is a membership-driven site, $39 a year. People can subscribe to get all of our information. But once you're in, you can access everything, including that. The things to keep in mind, really, in terms of interactions are that minerals will compete with other minerals for absorption, especially when you're taking a large amount of one mineral and you're taking a small amount of another one. So the biggest concern in terms of minerals would be with calcium interfering with the absorption of other minerals. Because when you take calcium, you know, you're building your entire and maintaining your entire skeleton from calcium. So you need a lot of calcium. You need over a gram of calcium per day, or actually anywhere from a gram to 1300 milligrams per day, depending on your age, gender. So you really don't want to take that amount. If you're taking a lot of calcium, take it at a different time of day than you're taking other minerals. Some of the fat-soluble vitamins compete with each other as well. Vitamin D has been found to inhibit, and vitamin E have been found to inhibit the absorption of vitamin K, for example.
Oh, really? How come then when you see sometimes you get vitamin D and K come together?
Marketing.
Isn't that interesting? I was thinking about a product I've seen that has vitamin D and K in it together.
Sure. There are a lot of bone health supplements, which the marketing people say, this sound, you know, people are going to like this. It has everything you want in it. Doesn't mean it's the best way to take it. Most of these formulas that are sold anyhow have never been tested clinically.
Wow.
It's all borrowed science from having tested probably one supplement, you know, vitamin D here, vitamin K there, and calcium here. It doesn't mean that taking them together is really a great thing. However, if you're taking calcium, though, you got to make sure that you are getting enough vitamin D. They don't compete with each other. Studies have shown that you're less likely to have any downside from calcium if you're taking it with some vitamin D. It doesn't mean you have to take it at the same time. I mean, you have to be getting enough vitamin D. You could be getting it from the sun,
right,
but make sure that your vitamin D levels are not too low. And if you want, I'd like to talk a little bit about vitamin D, because there's so much misinformation, I think, about vitamin D.
Absolutely. And I want to come back around to calcium, so don't let me forget. But let's go about vitamin D. Because a lot of us with autoimmune and whatever meds we're on are told to stay out of the sun. So vitamin D is critical for people with autoimmune.
Right. And vitamin D is critical for everyone. And basically, you know, we read every study that comes out on vitamin D, and we test vitamin D supplements. And our report on vitamin D is extensive, you know, probably answer any question anyone has about vitamin D. Some of the key things are the level that you need, your blood level. You know, if you get it checked when you see your doctor, you want 20 nanograms per ml or better. Below that is where you're really insufficient in terms of vitamin D. I mean, you could go a little lower than that and still probably be okay, but anything below 20 is not good. The sweet spot that we've seen from all the studies that have been coming out is between 25 and 35. So you can go up to about, like, even to the high 30s, you're okay. But what's happened is people have gotten so excited about vitamin D is that they're trying to push their levels higher than that. We get emails from people saying, my level's at 50 and I want to get it to 60. And I'm thinking, you don't want to be over 39 in the first place, because there are downsides to having too much vitamin D. And they include actually increased risk of death during the period of a number of studies. I mean, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
Higher risk of falls and fractures. And there are several others. On the other hand, if you are deficient in vitamin D and you can raise your level up to over 20, you know, maybe into that 25 to 35 range, you have a decreased risk of death and cardiovascular events. You have a decreased risk of fractures and falls, you know, asthma benefits, allergy benefits, a whole host of benefits, obviously in bone health as well. So I think part of the reason for this misinformation on vitamin D is kind of due to kind of industry, in a sense, where when you get your blood test back, for some bizarre reason, they'll show you the range, the normal range, and they'll say it's like 30 to 100. When that is not normal. I mean, normal is somewhere between, you know, 20 and 30. That's a much more normal range. So people get these reports back and they're like, oh my God, I want to get up to like 90 or whatever. And that's a mistake. So now I'm off my little rant about D.
I agree with you though about blood tests, and I'm just going to speak in general terms. When you get that number like between 20 and 100 or, you know, 30 and 60, it never makes it really clear on what is the optimal number.
Right.
Not like, do I want to run it all the way up to 100, or is optimal, as you said, between that 25 and 35? And it's always so frustrating. I'm not even sure a lot of physicians know those optimal numbers. Like, okay, doc, what number do I want to hit?
Right. I mean, and these numbers are established, like the 20 limit, the 20 cutoff is a very good number. I mean, if you're above 20, I really wouldn't worry. If you want to take a little bit more, that's fine. But these are established by the national academies. They have a group within the Food Nutrition Board called the Institute of Medicine. They have experts who are setting these RDAs, you know, recommended daily allowances. They're setting the upper limits as well. There are upper limits for most vitamins and minerals. That is a level above which you start increasing your risk of toxicity, you know, from taking that mineral or vitamin. That information is not on labels. You'll never find that on a dietary supplement.
Yeah.
It really should be there, you know, because a company can put in any amount of a vitamin or supplement or herb that they want that they think is going to sell, basically. And it's up to you to, you know and be educated as a consumer before you walk into that store or go online and know, like, what is too much? You know, with vitamin D, you need about 600 to 800 IU per day. You know, most products have 1,000. Many have 2,000, 5,000. You can find 50,000 out there.
Now, what's the best kind of D, though? I mean, I've been told like D3 is good.
Right.
And then also, is tablet or the oil better? So I've seen it sort of in droppers. You know, you're supposed to take three drops or whatever.
Right.
What's better?
Well, first of all, vitamin D2 and D3 are the two that are out there. D3, if you're taking a lot of vitamin D, you know, several thousand IUs per day, it's been found to be a bit better than vitamin D2. At this point, most products are vitamin D3 anyhow, so I wouldn't really worry about it. There is a lot of vitamin D2 being sold. In terms of how you take it, though, it's a fat-soluble vitamin. So you want to take it with a fatty meal. It doesn't have to be, you know, full-fat meal, but something that has some oils in it. It could be, you know, olive oil. It could be any kind of oils, because you will absorb more of that vitamin D. if you take it with a food, with a meal that has some fats in it. So it doesn't really matter what form, you know, the pill is in that when you take it, as long as you're taking it with a meal with some fats, you'll get about 30 to 50% greater absorption of the vitamin D if you take it that way.
Wow. I am just, there's so many variables to all of this. I mean, your absorption, the meals, all of that. Oh my gosh. Okay. Anything else about vitamin D? And then I want to circle back to calcium because I have a couple of questions about calcium.
Sure. Let's go back to calcium.
Well, calcium and magnesium as well are those things, and they come in so many forms. For calcium, when you're reading the back, I can't remember them all, but different ways they make calcium. What is the best calcium for people with immune deficiency so they can absorb it? Because you're right, one of the things that happens is our systems are kind of off and we are more prone to fractures and all sorts of things, always having to get bone scans, the density scans. So what's the best calcium to take if you're immune compromised?
It's really, what's the best calcium to take, you know, to make sure you're absorbing it, really? You know, once you get it, it doesn't matter so much. You just got to get that calcium out of, you know, through your gut into your bloodstream. There's better.
A lot of people can't take dairy. A lot of people have food sensitivities with immune conditions and are told to stay away from dairy. So there you go. There goes your yogurt.
Right. So first of all, in terms of a supplement, calcium citrate or malate are absorbed better than calcium carbonate. Calcium carbonate is fine. I mean, you can use calcium carbonate and you can still get all the calcium you need, but you don't absorb it as well. So if you just want to take a supplement, calcium is, as I said before, is one of those kind of things you need a lot of it. And it's kind of bulky and the pills can be pretty big. People could even have trouble swallowing them. So there's kind of a trade-off. The calcium citrate is absorbed better. It's actually a bigger molecule. The citrate part is the majority of the molecule. So a calcium citrate pill will actually be bigger than a calcium carbonate pill. But that's a trade-off because you'll absorb more of the citrate. However, you know, it's best to get as much as you can from your food. You know, if you can't have it, get dairy. And dairy is great because 3-4 cups of milk or yogurt, you know, is all you need for the day. But there are other sources of calcium out there. You know, you can get calcium from soybeans and sesame seeds, and they're very rich in calcium. You can get it from meat even. Certainly sardines and canned salmon, because they have bones in them that are soft. Those are very rich in calcium. So there are ways of getting the calcium. But if you still feel like you need more, you can take a supplement. You don't want to take more than 1,000 milligrams of calcium per day from a supplement. That's where they've shown increased risk of stroke and other cardiovascular disease. And you don't want to take more than 500 milligrams at a time, because you can't absorb more than 500 milligrams at a time. I think ideally you really should want to, I would keep your calcium intake from a supplement to under 500 milligrams per day. And I would shoot for the calcium citrate. We have some top picks in our calcium review, which we just published just a few weeks ago.
Do you take that with any particular type of food? Like you were saying with the vitamin D, with a fat, does calcium do well with a particular type of food?
It doesn't really matter that much with the calcium. It's not fat soluble. You just don't want to take it when you're taking some other mineral supplement, because it can compete with the absorption of that mineral. You know, let's say you need a little bit of zinc for something or you know, magnesium, etc. If you're taking a large amount of calcium, take it at a different time of day.
Now, see, here again, isn't that funny? I've seen calcium magnesium products together, like, you know, it has this list of,
yeah, I know,
things like that together. Gosh,
I know, it makes people think, oh, I need to take magnesium if I'm taking calcium. You don't need to take them together, and you don't even, you may not even need one or the other.
Oh my gosh, this is great. Oh wow, we need to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back in just a minute. We're gonna just keep finding out more of this fantastic information, because I'm like, we have to come here to find out where it is. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And we're here with Dr. Todd Cooperman, and he is a noted researcher and commentator on consumer healthcare issues. And he is also the founder of ConsumerLab.com, amongst many, many other things here on his bio. And we've been talking about supplements, and it's a large topic. I know we're just scratching the surface today. We'll have him back on because this is just amazing information. Everything about what you should be eating with your supplements to the types of supplements. So we've talked about vitamin D, which a lot of people with immune problems need more of, and calcium, which is great. One of the things, and we talked a little bit before the break about magnesium, and I remember being told about magnesium for things like muscle cramps and things like that. How much of that do we need, and how do we take it?
Right. So there is some evidence that magnesium may help with muscle cramps. The amount of magnesium that you need per day, I think it's around 350 milligrams, give or take, per day. Again, you can get that, you know, from your food. You can also get it from a supplement. The downside from getting too much magnesium from a supplement is typically diarrhea. I mean, there are other things that can occur if you take super high amounts of magnesium, but that's the bigger issue. And so you want to keep your magnesium intake from the supplement, you know, under that amount. So I would try to get as much as you can, you know, from your foods. And you can supplement a bit. You know, it's safe to take up to, you know, certainly 300 milligrams of magnesium. Actually, you know, citrate also is a good form of magnesium to take.
And I guess that side effect, diarrhea, is probably a pretty obvious symptom. If you've got unexplained diarrhea, check your magnesium intake.
Yeah, you know, I should say something really interesting happened just last week. We were publishing our magnesium report, our latest one. You know, we put out these reports, revise them all the time. One of the products was a magnesium chloride supplement. Actually, 2 were liquids and 1 was in a tablet form. Magnesium chloride attracts water. It's hygroscopic. And so we did a little photo shoot of these pills. You can see it on our site. And one of the tablet, which was this magnesium chloride, the next day we went back to kind of clear off the chute. It was dripping wet, and all the supplements around it were wet. It absorbs water so quickly that it's the kind of supplement you do not want to use if you're going to be putting your pills in, say, like a weekly pill pack, because it will get all your other pills wet and it will ruin them. So I would stay away from magnesium chloride as a tablet. It's sold as a liquid, and actually, it's a little safe. It's less likely to cause diarrhea than the other forms. So if you need, for some reason, you're told you need to take a lot of magnesium, you can take it as a liquid as magnesium chloride, but do not take magnesium chloride as a tablet. It'll wreak havoc on your other tablets. But, you know, another thing we're looking at when we evaluate these supplements is we're always looking at it as a consumer. I mean, when I started the company and I with Dr. William Obermeier, we said, this is information we want to be able to tell our mothers. I mean, that is like the bottom line on everything that we do here. It's like, is this what I would tell my mother, you know? And how would I explain it? You know, is this a product that I would recommend as approved? So we're also looking at price, and we're trying to figure out really what's the best form, the best product at the best price. I mean, why waste your money? So it's interesting in all these reviews, we typically are able to come up with a supplement where you can get a great quality product in the right form for really pennies a day. So that's another thing you'll see on Consumer Lab is we show the price comparisons based on a specific amount of magnesium. Mm-hmm. And it usually can find a really good product at a very low price. So I wouldn't use price as an indicator of quality.
Oh, that's a good point, because oftentimes we look at something and they, oh, well, that's $59. Ouch, but it must be $20 better than that one. So I'm glad you bring that up.
Right.
Oh my goodness. So what are some other just types of things that, like price, you're saying? I mean, I guess that's an automatic assumption we had. And we also talked a little bit about marketing when we did the calcium magnesium together and the D and the K together. What are some other kinds of things that we should be aware of that are marketing, I was going to use the word tricks, but...
So first of all, you know, there are many products that have mega doses, of ingredients. Instead of 100% of what you should be getting, they'll have 1,000 or 10,000. You see it with a lot of the B vitamins.
And that looks scary to me.
It is scary. I mean, there's no good reason to have these enormous amounts other than marketing. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, we've been doing this for 18 years. I'm an MD. We have access to all, great experts and information as well on top of what we know. There is no good reason for these mega doses.
Well, I got a quick question about a mega dose, though. Let's say we get the blood test back from a D and we're like very, very low. Is it better to mega dose for a short period of time and get that number up? Or is it better to take little bits over a period of time to get the number up?
Well, actually, with vitamin D, they've done studies using mega doses. They give you 100,000 IU at a shot. And this typically is done when they're not sure that the patients will come back every day or take their medicine properly. And they've shown that it is not as useful as taking it on a daily or, if you have to, weekly basis. But there is certainly a case for taking more than the daily requirement if you're deficient. Certainly, that's perfectly fine and understandable. It's just that when people aren't deficient or they're not terribly deficient, there's really no reason for these mega amounts. Now, and I would just quickly mention, because melatonin is very popular right now, and I like melatonin. I mean, it works. I mean, it really does, within 45 minutes, it'll make you want to go to sleep. It's not going to keep you asleep. That's not what it does. But it will kind of trigger you to go to sleep. And sometimes I give it to my children on a Sunday night after they've been up late on the weekend so that it'll trigger them to go to sleep, on time. But the thing is, you only need about half a milligram of melatonin to work, maybe a milligram, as an adult at the most. But there are products with 10 milligrams, and this is a hormone. In England, they sell melatonin, and it's only to be used for a couple of weeks at a time, maximum 13 weeks.
Wow.
I was talking to someone who's taking 20 milligrams of melatonin every night. And what research is showing is that, and it's kind of just evolving because they're just starting to look at it, there's actually, I believe, is a bone weakening issue with taking melatonin continuously, at a high dosage. So, try to get an idea of really what you really need to take in the first place. Then another unfortunate thing is that the current labels on supplements, are most of them are incorrect. And the reason is when you look at the daily value information, these percent DV, on the back of a supplement bottle, it'll say supplement facts and then percent DV. And it'll say maybe you're looking for 100% if you're taking a multivitamin, for example. Those numbers are old. Those DVs on which it's based are old numbers. They're decades old. And the FDA just finally last year changed the daily values to something that's more appropriate and really based on the RDAs set by the Institute of Medicine that I mentioned earlier. Unfortunately, the new information isn't reflected on the labels yet. They gave companies 2 years to get that done. So you won't see any correct information in terms of DVs until next July of 2018. And now there's talk with the new FDA head that may be delayed further because industry is kind of balking, because that's part of a whole larger change in labeling that involves foods as well and the labeling of sugars and things like that. So this whole thing may get pushed further. So until then, a lot of the information that you're seeing there is not really accurate. And the biggest problem is with folic acid, which is the vitamin B9. Now, like pregnant women, as you probably remember, they need to get extra folate to make sure that their babies basically don't have spina bifida, like a spinal cord defect. And it's very useful in that regard. However, most products use folic acid. Folic acid is actually absorbed so well, as opposed to the folate you would get from green leafy vegetables, that when a product says 100% of the daily value and it's using folic acid, you're actually getting 170% of the daily value using folic acid.
Wow.
And there's an upper limit of 1,000 micrograms of folic acid. You usually want about 400 micrograms per day. The upper limit is 1,000. most supplements, if they just want to give you what you need, will give you 400 micrograms of folic acid. But a lot of them have these mega amounts. So they'll have like 800 or more. And it's actually putting you over the upper limit. And you wouldn't even know it from the labels because all you're seeing is 100% of the daily value.
Wow.
So there are a number of other things that have changed, but that's the one I'm most concerned about. And particularly for a pregnant woman, I'm concerned because there was actually one study that showed that women who got too much folic, had very high levels of folic acid in their blood, women who were in Baltimore, it was a Johns Hopkins study. And it's a small and preliminary kind of study, but they actually had higher rates of autism in their children than women who had lower levels of folic acid, not low levels, but more appropriate levels of folic acid. And the issue was compounded if they had high levels of B12. I'm guessing that they were probably taking prenatal vitamins that had like very high levels that might have looked like that they were getting what they needed, but it was really much higher than they needed.
Wow, one of those things where you're trying to do the right thing. And
right. So if you're pregnant, as a pregnant woman, I would take like a women's one a day or something like that, that's giving you 400 micrograms, not 800 micrograms. And it's 400 micrograms of folic acid, just like you're supposed to get. And I wouldn't take anything more than that. But unfortunately, most of the prenatals out there, for some reason, are giving you 800 micrograms of folic acid, which is really more like, 1600 micrograms of folate.
Wow.
I know it's kind of, the numbers are kind of confusing, but the bottom line is, you know, don't overdo it.
Well, a question then about the folic acid. A lot of people are on meds and they're told certain immune suppression meds, they're told you have to take folic acid, folate, something like that to support these immune suppression drugs. Now, my question is, what comes up with this new study or the new concept of genetics, I'll say, and the methyl folate? Some people have genetics where they can't take the folic acid and they're supposed to take the methyl folate. Now, how does that play into it, too? I mean, we're just getting all over the board here, but that's a question that always comes up with this idea of folate supplementation and autoimmune suppression drugs.
Right. So folate is then converted in your body into the methylfolate. So that's the active form. Some people don't, genetically, they don't convert it as well. Although really when you dig into this area, most people can use folic acid. They can, you know, use the folate. They don't need the methylfolate. It's kind of a bit overhyped in my opinion, but a lot of, you know, you see a lot of websites like you got to get the methylfolate. You can certainly meet all your needs for folate from regular folic acid and folate, unless you're in a very rare situation where, I don't know, maybe you're like, you know, homozygous for this condition, which is very, not that common. But most people who have just have a little issue with it, they can be fine with the other form. However, if it makes you happy and you feel a little more comfortable with it, buy the methylfolate. And in our review of B vitamins and our multivitamin review, there are certainly good methylfolate products out there. They tend to be a little bit more expensive. But, you know, if you're concerned that you're not getting enough, you can go that way as well. But I don't think the issue is quite as dire as some people make it out to be.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Dr. Cooperman, this is amazing. We're out of time. Can you believe it? I want to make sure that the audience has plenty of time to know more about Consumer Labs. We've been talking about it, you know, off and on. But give the URL again and how people can join. And any final thoughts that you want to leave us, because I know we've been sharing so much. Are there any final thoughts that you would just like to leave us with?
You know, I think there were great questions that you asked, and I'm glad we covered a lot of things, because you really need to be, it's a buyer beware situation with supplements. I mean, that's the bottom line. You need to know what you want and what you need, you know, before you buy something, and then how to take it properly and make sure the product's a good one. And that's really at consumerlab.com. That's what we are all about. It's all about taking all that information, synthesizing it, and giving it to a consumer so that they can kind of check everything off when they're looking. So we're at consumerlab.com, same place we've been since 1999. And membership is $39 a year. It's actually going up at the end of this month. On July 1st, it's going up by a few dollars. We raise the rate every 2 years just to cover, you know, our increased costs. So you can join right now for $39, and that gives you everything for a year. And then you'll get our newsletter twice a week as well. So you'll know all the latest information, as well as recalls, warnings, new reports, et cetera.
And you know what I love about it is supplements can be really expensive, depending on the situation and who your healthcare provider is. A whole plethora of types of supplements are wanting to say, you should take this and this and this and this. And what I love about your site is you can go in there, do a little research yourself. And oftentimes I've come away asking questions that my healthcare provider is like, really? Couldn't answer, you know, or I had no idea. And some of the things you've shared today, I've just been stunned too, because I've had conflicting advice from healthcare providers. So it's fantastic. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Autoimmune Hour. We're going to have you back because this is just such a huge topic. It's an expensive topic for sure. If you buy many supplements, you can easily drop a lot of dollars. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Sharon. I appreciate it. Be happy to be back on.
Okay, everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventure. And as always, enjoy.
The information provided on LifeInterruptedRadio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by LifeInterruptedRadio.com. This episode is brought to you by MindfulnessInActionBook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
This is the EWN Radio Network.